It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Kurt Frankum in the house. This is the Leading LDS Podcast, and I am your host. Today's episode is a fun one because it features a funny person, Brian Crane. Now, that name may not sound familiar to you, but I promise you, you've seen his artwork and you've laughed at his artwork. I remember growing up in my home, every morning my father would spread out the newspaper on the kitchen counter as he ate breakfast, and it would always take time to go to the funnies. This generally ended up with him chuckling, elbowing my mom next to him, and say, "You've got to read today's Pickles." Pickles is the comic strip that Brian Crane draws. It features Earl and Opal Pickles, who have been married for over 50 years. It shows the funny side of family and friendship. Earl and Opal share their golden years with their 30-something daughter Sylvia, her husband Dan, and their beloved grandson Nilsson. Their dog Roscoe and cynical cat Muffin also enliven the Pickles household. Whether observing the differences between gender and generations or taking a wry but sympathetic look at life in the twilight years, Crane's good-natured wit and dry humor are sure to please readers of all ages. In 2013, Crane won Cartoonist's highest honor, the Rubin Award for Cartoonist of the Year, for his 2012 Pickles strip. In 1995 and 2001, Pickles was nominated for Best Comic Strip of the Year by the National Cartoonist Society, winning the coveted award in 2001. Pickles has topped comic polls across the nation again and again, and appears in 900 newspapers around the world. That bio comes from the Washington Post. So here is my interview with a very funny man who creates a very funny family, talking about very funny leadership. Well, not so funny, but it's leadership nonetheless. And today we have Brian Crane on the episode with us. How are you, Brian?
Great. How are you?
Good. So you are the creator of this Pickles family. Is that accurate?
Guilty as charged, yep. No one to blame but me, I guess.
Okay. And how long have you been at this comic?
Wow. Well, as of this coming April 1st, it'll be 25 years, quarter of a century.
There you have it. It's you may actually make it in this industry, huh?
Yeah, I hope so. I'm still trying out here and doing the best I can.
Good. Now, one thing many people don't know about you, and I found out a few years back, I think it was in high school, and I would see various winks and nods towards the LDS culture in your comics, but you are an actual Latter-day Saint and have a LDS background. Is that correct?
Yep, I've been a lifelong member.
Cool.
I do. Occasionally I put little icons that are recognizable to church members. I put little pictures of the temple on the walls, or I will have them reading the ensign or other things like that.
Okay, cool. Now, maybe let's talk about your upbringing a little bit. You say you're a lifelong member. Where do your roots originate, and where were you raised?
Well, I was born in Idaho, in Twin Falls, Idaho, but we moved shortly thereafter to California, to the Bay Area, where I was raised. My parents were members, both returned missionaries. I was raised in the church, and so I'm just pretty much a lifetime member.
Okay. Okay. Now, one thing I've mentioned in a past podcast when I interviewed John Clark, who's another cartoonist, is that I consider myself an amateur cartoonist, and I do caricatures, and you know, people hire me for weddings and corporate events, and I'll go around and do live caricatures. And many times as I'm drawing, people ask me, so how long have you been drawing? And I usually respond with my canned bad joke of, ever since I was bored in church. And my expertise of caricatures, I guess, came really from Fast Sundays, when I had a series of different people stand and give their testimonies. It gave me a, you know, every 5 minutes or so, I had a new person to draw. So were you always drawing as a young person in church, or when did your drawing start?
Well, I don't know if that's where it started, but I do have a lot of memories of filling sacrament meeting programs with drawings. I figured that's what the programs were for, and I kind of annoyed me when they had too many words and there wasn't enough white space for me to
draw
on.
Right, I've been there.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And yeah, I used to, throughout my early years of marriage and through high school, I would generally, when I would pay my tithing, I would flip the envelope over and then draw the various speakers or the bishopric. And so it got to the point, I remember the first year I was married, we were in a, you know, basement apartment, just our first ward, and the bishopric would get so giddy when they would see me coming with the envelope, because they knew there would be, you know, something to laugh about on the back. But so that's always fun. Did you go on? Did you serve a mission?
Yeah, I served in the Uruguay Paraguay mission from 1968 to 70.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And coming back as a typical traditional, you met your wife and then started a family?
Yeah, typical BYU love story. I was put in a family home evening group, and in those days they had, they designated one of the guys as father and one of the sisters as a mother.
Okay.
And they had the sons and daughters there, and I started dating one of the daughters and married her, so it's kind of a scandalous thing in my background.
It's as much a scandal as BYU got back in those days, I'm sure. So,
right.
Well, cool. And now I know that you would, like most cartoonists that are syndicated, you know, it's not something you just decide to do and you easily get syndicated. It is quite competitive and a long journey. So what did your career start in, and then how did it transition into being a syndicated cartoonist?
Well, when I was a child, my dream was to grow up to do a comic strip. But as I got into my senior years of high school and started actually thinking seriously about, now really, how am I going to make a living? It didn't seem like a realistic goal to do a comic strip. I mean, I knew how difficult it was, and I didn't really think I had the talent, especially for writing. I didn't think I would be able to come up with all the ideas you would need to do a comic strip every single day of the week. And so I was thinking more in terms of finding something of a job where I went to work and got a paycheck and didn't have to worry about creating a space for myself on the comics pages, which I knew would be, you know, just an almost impossible task, or at least in my mind it was.
Sure.
So I decided to major in art and concentrate on graphic design and illustration. I still wanted to use artwork. I enjoyed that. I wanted to use it as a career, but I wasn't, you know, like I say, I didn't have the self-confidence in my writing abilities to think I would be able to chisel out that kind of a career for myself. So I started a career working in advertising agencies and publishing companies and freelancing at home, and did that for about 20 years, which I guess put me at about the age for a midlife crisis. Getting close to 40, and I started thinking back to my childhood dream and how I'd never actually even tried to pursue it. I'd just written myself off and without even having swung the bat, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I decided to see what I could do. I started sketching out ideas for a comic strip. And that's a big decision, choosing the subject matter for your comic strip, because if you're at all successful, you could be writing and drawing these characters for possibly the rest of your life.
Yeah.
No, it's a big commitment. You got to make sure you pick something that will inspire you for possibly decades, and you know you don't want to run out of material after the first few months. So
yeah, sure.
Something you really identify with and feel that you can be inspired by for a long time. So it was that was the hardest part for me, was just drawing lots of different characters and waiting for lightning to strike. So yeah. I drew a lot of different, filled a lot of different sketchbooks, and nothing really struck me until I drew this old lady, and she just appealed to me. You know, I imagined her as kind of a slightly cranky but still lovable older woman, and I wasn't sure if she was going to be a widow or if she was going to be married or what. And I finally decided that she needed a foil to bounce off of, and so I decided to let her have a husband, and they just kind of reminded me of people we knew. At the time I was doing this or thinking of this, we were in Idaho Falls. We lived in a ward right by the Idaho Falls Temple, and it was a ward mostly full of old people. You know, we were a young couple in a ward full of grandparents.
Oh yeah,
that's where a lot of the inspiration came, because it was great to have all these grandparently figures around us, and our kids just loved them. And so as I was drawing these characters, they reminded me of my own family members who were old, and these people in my Idaho Falls ward, and I just thought, hey, no one's doing a strip about old people. Maybe
wow.
There's a niche there for me. And so that's how I decided to pursue that.
Great, and now it's sort of played to your benefit now, as technology and internet's coming along. And obviously, I mean, I read your comic every day online. I don't get the newspaper, but the older generation still sort of gets the newspaper and maybe can relate to your comics as well. I don't know if that, I'm sure you didn't think of that back when you actually created them, but that's maybe.
You know,
maybe...
actually, the fact that I was drawing a strip about old people in a way, in the beginning at least, worked against me, because newspapers were losing subscribers like you.
Yeah.
And, They were looking for strips that would appeal to young people, because they wanted, because they knew they had old people already as readers, so they were looking for strips to bring the young folks in. And mine wasn't what they were looking for. So the first few years, it was kind of a struggle to add papers, and so I had to keep my day job. I'd work at the ad agency all day, then come home at night and have dinner with the family, and then go out to my studio in the garage and work till 11 or midnight on comic strips. So it was that was about 5 years I had to do that, until we built up enough subscribing newspapers that I could quit the day job. But it was a hard 5 years for my wife. She was almost like a single mom those years.
Yeah. Now, did you raise your family primarily in the Idaho Falls area, or?
We moved in 1984 to the Reno, Nevada area. So our kids were still young, and so it was kind of a big decision to yank them out of schools and things to an unknown area. We moved here because I had a job offer at a bigger ad agency. I wasn't doing the comic strip yet when we came here, and so it seemed like a good opportunity, and it's turned out. My wife didn't want to move here. I promised her that we wouldn't stay longer than 5 years, and it's been 30 years now.
Wow.
I guess we must like it.
Yeah. So so you're currently, you've kind of made your roots in, or buried your roots in Reno area then, right?
Right. Yeah. That's where we've been, and this is where I've drawn the strip all these years.
Oh, great. Well, and I would imagine that once you become a full-time syndicated cartoonist, you can probably live anywhere. Is that right? Or by that time, you were comfortable?
A few years ago, I started trying to convince my wife, well, we could live anywhere. Let's go someplace interesting, you know, exciting and exotic. But,
yeah.
You know, after a while, you get your kids in school, and then you got grandkids, and you find you've sunken your roots pretty deep. And so...
Yeah.
Now it's more important who we live by than where we live.
Yeah.
We, you know, we go on vacations and things, but we want to be as close as we can to where our kids and grandkids are.
Perfect. Sure.
Plus, they're a big source of inspiration for my strip too, so I can't get too far away from.
Yeah, you have Nilsson in the comic strip, who's the grandson that stirs the pot from time to time, right?
Yeah, he was. When I began the strip, I had my son Jonathan was about that age, so I kind of pictured him as a reincarnation of Jonathan. Although my other son, Matthew, also, you know, I got inspiration from him too. But it's nice when you can, you know, you have a little character like that. I've kind of frozen him in time. I don't let him get any older because I like the fact that he's at sort of a naive age where he can look up to his grandpa. His grandpa can tell him anything he feels like, and Nelson believes him, no matter how outlandish it is.
Yeah, it seems every once in a while Nelson will call his bluff, but for the most part.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, and I'll quickly mention, too, the Everything Creative episode series on the Mormon Channel interviewed you a few years ago, I guess it was, and there was a few other cartoonists on there. So, you know, and they talked to you more about the creative process, which I found really interesting. So, now let me just ask you just for fun. You mentioned you have various items and things you put in the comic. I've noticed the temple pictures over the years. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember a few years back there was, I believe it was a Sunday comic, and there it was. I don't remember the premise of the gag or anything, but at some point, you know, Earl, I think the dog got his pants or something, and he was running away without any pants, and so he had obviously some boxer shorts on, but they didn't have hearts on them. They didn't have, you know, stars. They were simple white shorts as his underwear. Was that maybe another Mormon reference at all, or?
Well, you know, my characters in my mind are LDS.
Okay.
Yet I can't really. I don't.
Right. You don't. Proclaim that.
I don't proclaim. I want it to be a strip where everyone can identify with the characters, no matter what religion or creed they are.
Uh-huh.
So I have my characters living their religion to the best of their ability, and in my mind, yeah, they're temple worthy members, and so
it seemed natural to do.
Yeah,
that.
When I'm drawing Earl in his shorts, you know. That's what they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And
cool.
And other people just don't think anything of it, I guess.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you've also y'all obviously put the pictures of the temples, and then from time to time you will. Earl's wisdom actually comes from modern day prophets. Is that right?
Yeah. Occasionally, I'll hear a remark said by one of the general authorities or something that. I think I can do something with, like, there was one quote that I used, and I think it was from President Monson, where he said, a wise man once said, the past is behind, learn from it. The future is ahead, prepare for it. The present is here, live with it. And then the comic strip Earl saying this to Nelson, and then Opal walks up and says, a wise woman once said, dinner is ready, come and get it. And Nelson says, I like that one best.
Nice.
So, yeah, I think I've used other ones occasionally too, and
sure.
And,
sure.
No one has ever gotten mad at me from the church, so I guess I'm okay.
Sure. Well, we're encouraged to hasten the work and share the wisdom the best we can in our own arenas, and so I think that's a great way to do it. And I from time to time I have noticed you know Earl and Opal in church, and again you don't. It just looks like a. Traditional American, you know, Christian church with pews and things. Is that right?
Yeah. Early on, I had them in a less LDS environment. I guess there was like a pastor because I thought that would appeal to more people. But then I thought, I came to the realization, well, what am I doing this for? You know, in my mind, they're LDS. Let them show them as LDS people.
Sure. Yeah. So this is... The question I've been wondering about the most is, has Earl ever served in leadership in the church?
Oh, good question. I've never given any indication that he has.
Well, sure. But, I mean, in your mind, what do you think? Would he be able to do it?
Yeah, I think he might make a second assistant in the high priest quorum.
Yeah?
Something like that.
With some snide remarks here and there, right?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I've gotten ideas from my high priest quorum. One time I was in the meeting and someone piped up, he said, you know, if you put everyone how did it go? I have a hard time remembering my own strips of time.
Well, there's a lot of them.
If, you put everyone in high priest quorum who falls asleep in a long line, it'd all be a lot happier, or something like that.
That was
a strip I got from high priest.
So you just simply tweak it and put it in their world, and there you have. And I'm sure... Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to... I steal ideas wherever I hear something, you know. I'm always looking for something to use in the strip, so
yeah,
if I hear a good idea, I'll grab it.
Yeah, I remember I went to the University of Utah, and the Daily Utah Chronicle, I did editorial cartoons for them as my time there, but then they asked me to do a comic strip, and I thought, well, that's a fun challenge, and so I remember I did one about the main character was a professor. I kind of did it in the world of you know, the academic universities, and man, to think of a gag every day, I bet you're just looking for every opportunity to be inspired and write down something funny that you can put into the Pickles universe.
It is. It's a daily struggle. You know, some days you think, well, that's it. I've run out of ideas finally. I'm never going to have another idea.
This is the end of your career right here.
That's right. And, you know, there are a lot of cartoonists who do comic strips who use gag writers or work with a partner of a writer.
Hmm.
But I've never wanted to do that. I always felt that if I was going to do a comic strip, I wanted to do the writing and the drawing of it and have it be all my own.
Yeah.
And so, but it does get tough, and that's why I rely a lot on my family. I'm always getting ideas from things happening with my wife or my children or grandchildren. I'll give you an example, just. For the last few months, or actually maybe even a couple of years, my wife keeps getting a call from the wrong number. Some people asking for someone named Jeff. After a while, it gets annoying. She keeps getting calls for Jeff on her cell phone, and no matter. And sometimes she'll explain that she's not Jeff. Jeff doesn't live here. You have the wrong number, and they'll say something like, "Well, can I leave a message for Jeff?" You know, they just don't quite. So I'm doing a little series of strips about that.
Nice.
So my wife always kind of gets a kick when I take something that she's done and uses it in a comic strip.
Nice. Very good. And I bet, you know, you can't help but project, you know, obviously when you started this in your late 30s, you weren't really relating as well to an older couple. But now after 25 years, maybe has it become easier, do you think, since you are maybe closer to their age?
I think so, because, you know, I was having to use my imagination a lot more, but now I'm just, it's become a case of art imitating life or life
yeah.
imitating art. You know, I'm drawing myself these days.
Yeah, suddenly it's autobiographical.
I used to go, you know, I give talks to groups like Rotary Clubs and other groups, and it used to be when I'd go there and give a talk, you know, they didn't know what I looked like from the comic strips, and when I showed up, they'd see this youngish guy and say, wow, we thought the guy... the older the draws Pickles, that now I go to give talks and then they never ask me that anymore.
Yeah.
I guess it's obvious that I know whereof I speak.
Sure. So tell me from the perspective of a professional cartoonist, obviously you've been doing it a lot of years and you can't do it forever, at least in this mortal space. I'm sure in the millennium we'll need plenty of cartoonists, but do you, and I'm sure at some point, I don't know if retirement exists in the cartooning world, but I've always had the question of, does a cartoonist, you know, have 6 weeks of comics to end the series? Or, I mean, does Earl and Opal become a widow or widower at any point? What are your thoughts there?
Oh, I'm never going to kill off one of the characters. And as far as retiring, my goal is to just to go down with the ship, you know. I plan on drawing as long as I'm able to. So
great.
Whether I have any descendants or family members who will want to try to keep it going, like that is the case with some other strips like Dennis the Menace and the BC. Those are carried on by family members. There's quite a few that have happened that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone wants to step up to that plate and take that on, but. So it may just, but I mean, Charles Schulz, how long did he draw Peanuts? He was
right.
For about 50 years. I'm only about halfway there. So. He started younger than I did, too.
Yeah, and I'm sure it gets to a point where a syndicate like Charles Schulz, they can just recirculate the comics. Is that right?
Well, he's in a class by himself. Most comic strips wouldn't stand that kind of repeating, but he's so much a part of American culture that he can get away with it. And he had it in his will that no one would continue drawing his strip after he died. So no one was allowed to continue drawing it. So the papers wanted to carry it, they had to run reruns.
Huh.
And a lot of them still do.
Great. Well, cool. All right. So let's maybe pivot towards leadership, since that is the premise of this podcast. You mentioned to me prior to the interview that you've had various opportunities to accept callings that have challenged you in one way or another. Any particular, or maybe just tell us kind of your background as far as your activity in the church. What have you experienced and liked most?
it's funny, you know, I spent many years as a scoutmaster when my boys were young. I was a scoutmaster in troops in Idaho and California and here in Nevada, and helped a lot of boys get the Eagle Scout Award, and that was very rewarding.
Wow.
And just a few weeks ago, we went to another city to watch my grandson Caleb get his Arrow of Light and cross over into scouting from the Cub Scouts.
Oh, cool.
I was watching that. It brought back memories. You know, they saw the young men in their scout uniforms. I thought, you know, I've probably finally reached the age where I don't have to worry about scouting anymore. No one's going to call me to be in scouting, to sleep on the cold, hard ground and hike with these rambunctious boys up the hills.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later, I get a call from the counselor in the bishopric, and he calls me to be the 11-year-old scout leader.
Oh, my goodness.
So you got to be careful what you think, you know.
Right.
You never know what's in store.
Yeah, so that's a potential premise for your strip, is that there's maybe an idea that you get so old that people stop asking you to volunteer for things, right? But nice. So you're currently the 11-year-old scout leader then?
Yeah, I just got released recently from being in a singles ward bishopric. And,
oh, cool.
That was a challenging calling for me. Because the kids, I love it, and the kids are neat, but they just come and go so often. And learning names for me, I've never been good at remembering names. And by the time I remembered someone's name in the ward that had moved in, it seemed like they'd be gotten married now or gone off on a mission or something else. So I was constantly trying to remember names, and it seemed like the other members of the bishopric were a lot better at it than I was. And so I always felt bad about that.
Yeah, and so was that a singles ward right there in Reno?
Yeah, in Sparks.
Okay, and was it a young single adult ward, or what? How would you describe the demographic?
Yeah, young single adult.
Okay.
Yeah, 18 to 31.
Great. So how did that calling come to be? I know, was it a singles ward within your stake, or were you pulled into another kind of area? Or?
Yeah, there's three single stakes in this area, two in the Reno wards and one in the Sparks ward. So I'm in the Sparks stake, and so... Yeah, and the bishop is an old friend of mine, so I guess he decided to call in a favorite. That would be one of his counselors.
Oh, cool. Cool. And was that a tough transition away from your home ward?
Kind of, because we just moved to a new house, and I had just barely been in this ward. When he moved into the ward, I was serving on the high council, so I didn't get to come every week to my home ward, and so I never got to really know the people in my home ward. And then I got released from the High Council to serve in that bishopric, and so then I was out of there for about 3 years, and so now I'm finally back in our ward, and I don't know anybody, Art.
Nice.
I'm learning a few Boy Scouts names, though, anyway. So.
I bet. So maybe talk a little bit to that, the dynamic of serving in a bishopric in a singles ward. It's almost, I mean, the basic handbooks and things apply to a calling like that, but there is some unique dynamics to a YSA ward, I would imagine, that make unique. One thing you mentioned is kind of that the transient nature of the ward, people coming and going. Anything that surprised you and that you learned from that experience?
Well, it was a little bit of a, I don't know if it was a shock, but, you know, a different feeling to come into a ward where there's no babies crying in second meeting. It's totally quiet. There's no high priest. You're usually the oldest one in the room or one of the oldest people in the room.
Yeah.
And no, you know, there's no one, you know, there's no one your age. So you're kind of like the old wise man of the forest, you know.
Sure.
And the kids expect you to be very wise. And so when there's a question in a class, they all look. Everyone looks at you and for the definitive answer. And so that puts a lot of pressure on you. Like, what are y'all looking at me for?
Sure. Now, I know in a traditional ward, the bishopric members, you know, they'll have various auxiliaries that they're over, the primary, you know, Boy Scouts or whatever it is. So how did your responsibilities look like in a YSA ward?
Yeah, well, one of the counselors was over the elders' quorum, because there's no young men, young women, or anything, or high priests. So one counselor was over the elders' quorum, and one was over the Relief Society. And then there were three other assignments that went along, too. But those were the two main assignments. I was over the Relief Society, and so my assignment was to attend Relief Society every week. And usually I was the only, only a man in the room. It was kind of I felt kind of like a fish out of water most of the time.
Yeah, I bet.
But I really gained an appreciation for the Relief Society and how structured and how organized and prepared they are compared to some of the priesthood quorums I've been in.
Sure. And did your wife attend with you most weeks?
Yeah, when she could. She's got a state calling, too, and so she could only attend, you know, once in a while. But, yeah, whenever she was there, I always felt more comfortable. I had somebody to sit by.
Yeah. Well, good. So now is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but generally does that last about 2.5 years, maybe 3 years? In the YSA ward?
Generally, the bishop in our ward that I got released from, he's still serving. He's called, one of the counselors had to move because of a job, and so he decided to start with two fresh new counselors, and so he's still in there. He may be in there for 5 years, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay. Great. And so as the I don't know if you had opportunity to kind of bring the new counselors up to speed or whatever it was, but what advice would you have for somebody that's going into a YSA ward as a member of the bishopric?
Boy, just learn names quickly and learn to appreciate all the enthusiasm that they have. And they're just, they have so much energy and they have so. But they also come, you know, with such a wide spectrum. It's such a turning point in life. You know, that age group, they're at a crossroads, really, and they can go either way. You can see that they're having to choose. Do they go on a mission? Do they get married? Do they hang out with good friends or bad friends? And that was the hard thing about leaving the ward. It felt like I was leaving a movie, in the middle of the movie, you know, I wondered how some of these stories ended.
Yeah, I bet.
And so that's the neat thing about it. You're seeing people right at the crux of their life when they're making life-altering decisions, and you're able to be part of that and hopefully influence them to take the right path. It's really rewarding that way.
Wow, great.
But it can also be disappointing when you see them fail. You know, that's hard, too.
Yeah. And in the past, as I interview different leaders, obviously everybody really comes from a unique ward. There really isn't two wards alike in this church. And maybe just discuss the what was your basic week like as a member of the YSA ward bishopric? How did your meetings run? I'm sure you had FHE activities on Monday you had to attend. Maybe go through a typical week of that bishopric.
Yeah, well, in our building there was three wards, and they you know, a lot of wards rotate. So one ward starts at 9, one starts at 11, one starts at 1, and every year they rotate a little bit. But in this one, we had everything stayed the same. We had a Spanish branch that liked their meetings at 11, and the singles, they don't like to get up early, so we stayed at 1, and there was a regular family ward, which always started at 9, and they were happy with that. So, that was, if you like 1 o'clock meetings, that was a good ward to be in. And then we'd have early morning bishopric meetings on Sunday and talk about individuals a lot and what their needs were and do training, you know, leadership training. Each week one of the members of the bishopric would do some training and talk about our assignments and how that was going. Mondays, we would... Every third Monday, one of the bishoprics would hold a home evening at their home. So everyone would come to that bishopric member's home for family home evening.
Oh, cool.
And when they liked it when they went to the bishopric members, because we usually had lots of food or dessert for them and some kind of a fun activity. The other home meetings were usually at one of the ward buildings.
Yeah.
And then quite often, you know, there were... you know, with young people, they like to do activities to get together. So there were, you know, kayaking trips and hiking and things like that that they would plan. So that's pretty much what the week was like.
Okay. Now, two things I wanted to just maybe ask you about. One is you said as you'd have bishopric meeting, was that generally, did you just have it once a week for about an hour, or how often did you have bishopric meeting?
Yeah, other bishoprics I've been in, they would usually have a bishopric meeting during the week, but our bishop, just since we had all Sunday morning, we would start at, 7:45 and then meet till about, we'd meet in bishopric for like an hour and a half, then we'd have the PEC meeting and or ward council, depending on the week, and so it was pretty much meetings all morning until sacrament meeting started. So it was a long day of meetings.
I bet.
I kind of like breaking it up a little bit better on having a weekday meeting than meeting so long on Sundays.
Sure. But,
no, that's you got to go with what the bishop wants to do.
Sure. And I'm sure the callings are a difficult part, I would imagine. And when I was in a YSA ward, I remember that dynamic seeming like quite the burden for the bishopric is with you have so many people coming and going and getting everybody serving in some capacity and trying not to create too many kind of silly callings that didn't really feel like a calling. And I don't know if that's true, but so how does that dynamic go? Did your bishopric have any, you know, secret that seemed to work to handling that?
Well, yeah, because there's a lot of callings and regular wards that we don't have, but you know, you've got a lot of people and you want to keep them busy and give them callings and make them a meaningful way for them to serve. But and also it's kind of neat for the young people because a lot of times they're getting opportunities for meaningful callings they wouldn't necessarily get in a regular ward, you know, because there might be older, more experienced members that those callings would go to in a home ward.
Yeah.
But in this ward, you know, they get called, if, you know, into the elders quorum president or counselors and executive secretaries or things like that and serve in callings that, you know, most people wouldn't get until they were much, much older.
Yeah.
And, but sometimes, you know, you put people in callings and you have to do a lot of training because they are young, they're not necessarily, they don't have the experience that normally a person might have when they're called into a major calling like that. Even some of the returned missionaries are still kind of, haven't had that much, you know, experience in a leadership position. So that's why there's always a lot of training. And because of the high turnover, you're always training because they're just when you get someone where they don't know what they're doing, then they've moved on in a lot of cases. And so it's constantly train and train and train.
Yeah. And I'm the epitome of that story, that example you gave. I was called as my first leadership calling was as the elders quorum president in this ward where I met my wife. And, you know, I remember I had over 100 elders on the rolls in my quorum. And, you know, when you're technically only supposed to have 96, but, you know, and it's just, it was daunting. And I made a lot of mistakes. It was sort of leadership by fire, how to learn. So So you mentioned a lot of training, and some a lot of these training meetings happen on Sunday morning. And I don't mean to really pick at these details, but I think it would be helpful for other maybe bishoprics of YSA wards to just see a different perspective of how you approached it. But so how did what did these trainings consist of? Were they only for leadership? Were they for different types of callings? Or how did those trainings work?
Well, mostly we trained from the handbook, you know, took out the different sections or paragraphs and of the handbook and tried to show how to apply them in our quorums and groups. So it was just a training, and that would involve, your own experiences and sharing how you relate to that item in the handbook. So it was because a lot of them just never have, read the handbook all the way through, and they're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants, which, yeah. They need to make sure they're flying by the handbook rather than the seat of their pants.
That's great. I remember just a few weeks ago we had state conference, and the presiding authority was in every meeting. I don't know, maybe it's a direction from the general authorities or the Quorum of the Twelve, but he really hammered home the integration of the handbook, especially, handbook 2, which is available to all online. And, it's amazing. It's not a simple, list of protocols and do's and don'ts. There's some great doctrines in there that we can be taught. So that's great.
Yeah. The handbook is really a great resource. And the fact that it's available to everyone now is really remarkable.
Yeah. Cool. Any other part of those trainings that would be worth highlighting or?
No, I think we've covered it pretty much as I recall.
Good. Now you mentioned you'd served in other bishoprics, maybe in more traditional wards prior to this. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been in four bishoprics.
Oh wow. Okay. So any other guidance or thoughts over maybe related more to a traditional ward that you found has worked for you as a counselor? I kind of feel like the counselor position is forgotten a lot, as far as training and direction. You it's easy just to become one of the minions of the bishop when there's a lot of proactivity and things you can do there. So any thoughts on being a counselor in general in a bishopric?
Oh, I'm just grateful I'm a minion and not a bishop. That's I'll take a minion any day.
Right.
No, I think a counselor is a great calling because you're in on a lot of things that behind the scenes, and you associate with men of very high caliber, and it's really a growth opportunity to serve in a bishopric because you get to know the members of the ward a lot better. You learn of their struggles, things that you might not know if you were just a regular ward member, and it's kind of kind of an eye-opening experience to see how the other half lives, and in some cases it gives you inspiration how you should live, and other times it makes you glad you're who you are and
yeah
what you've been given.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's I've always loved being a counselor, and I think it's not quite the pressure that a bishop would have, but it's still a significant responsibility to advise a bishop in what should be done in certain circumstances and what best way to serve the needs of the members. That's a lot of it's a great opportunity and a great responsibility.
Yeah, and there's a lot of responsibility that come with these leadership callings, but especially in a bishopric and more so as a bishop, the way I like to describe it is it gives you an opportunity to watch the wonderful miracle of the atonement from the sidelines. You interact with people that need this change and need the atonement so much at one particular time in your life, in their life, and to be able to even be in the room sometimes as you see that miracle unfold, it's really a blessing. So you also mentioned you served on the High Council, is that right?
Yeah, so I think I've been on the High Council about 3 times, I think.
Oh, wow, okay. And my brother, he's currently serving as a bishop, and prior to being called as a bishop, he was on the High Council, and he described it as one of the loneliest callings in the church, just because you seem to be floating from, you don't really have a home ward. Sometimes you're floating to this other ward that you feel a part of, but you're not really part of that. And then you don't really, there's not this presidency mentality as you feel in a bishopric where you have two counselors and you kind of put your heads together in a room. Obviously you have high council meetings and things, but what was that experience like for you? Did it feel lonely or how did it go?
Yeah, you definitely have to be a self-starter, you know, because you're given an assignment or area to supervise or an award to be responsible to provide training to the people in that ward. And it's not like you're going to a bishopric meeting every week and the bishop says, how did you do on this? How did you do on that? You know, you're kind of left to your own devices. And so it's kind of up to you how much gets done. And I kind of thought of it kind of like being a lone ranger. You're out there, you know, whipping things into shape, and you can do so much, but you've got to be able to get yourself going and be self-motivated.
Yeah.
And I think you know, having started my own business, not working as an employee after 20 years and finally being my own boss, you know, I've learned, you know, to be a self-starter. You know, things don't happen unless you make them happen. You know, no one's going to come up to me and offer me a comic strip. I had to make that happen.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in when you're a high counselor. You know, if you're assigned to be in charge of welfare for the stake, you know, or home preparedness or whatever it is, a lot of that's just all on you to come up with your own ideas and figure out what the problems are and figure out how to solve them. And you can report on it once a month or so in state council. But most of the time, you know, it's just you and you have a state president counselor probably who's over you to bounce ideas off of. But a lot of it's just on your shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. And were you assigned to a specific ward as a state representative, or did that change?
Yeah, each time I was assigned to a specific ward, so I would attend that ward most of the time, except when I was speaking someplace else.
Yeah.
Yeah, so once a month I'd talk in a different ward, but other times I was in that ward, and quite often if they were meeting at the same time as my ward, you know, I never got to go to my home ward hardly.
Yeah, sure. And any advice as far as how to most effectively help the bishopric, or and I know that you have certain responsibilities with the elders quorum and high priest group. Any advice on how to develop that, an effective relationship there?
Well, you need to attend their meetings, their bishopric meetings and their PEC and ward council as much as you can, and learn what's going on. And a lot of times they don't think to ask you for help. Like they may call a new elders quorum president and maybe he's not knowing exactly how to fulfill his calling, and maybe they don't say, Brother Franklin, would you go help the elders quorum president, teach him his duties and show him how to do it? They may just not worry about it. And so it's kind of, you might have to take that upon yourself to say, I need to do some training here.
Yeah.
Set up a time for that.
Yeah, another self-starter moment that you just have to jump in, you know. So, well, interesting. Well, that's fantastic. You know, this, I think, all that you said would be very helpful for others that are maybe starting out those callings. I know there's a lot of question marks that pop up as you're going into something like a high council position or a YSA ward where, you know, everybody's new and this is a responsibility you've never done before. So, that's fantastic. The last question I have for you, Brian, is mainly just as you look over your years of serving, whether it's in scouting and what a great leadership calling that would be to help develop leadership and the young people. But then as your time in various leadership assignments, how have these experiences helped you become a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
Well, Jesus Christ, his life was service, and so as you serve in the church, you're, or just in life in general, you're trying to follow that example and look for ways you can help others and not think about yourself all the time, but think, you know, what can I do for somebody else? And that's where true joy comes from. And sometimes we get so caught up, you know, life becomes so complicated and hard, you know, with making a living or solving your family problems, and you've just become caught in a kind of a frame of mind of, you know, it's all about me, you know, what if somebody help me with these. Sometimes you, to help yourself, you have to go help somebody else. And that's where joy comes from, is in serving others. And I don't know that's anything very significant or
sure, or perfect.
Amazing to say. It's just that, you know, Jesus Christ went about doing good, and that's what I try to do as much as I can in my humble way, is to go about doing good in whatever situation in the church I'm called to, or in my association with other cartoonists, or when I speak to people in person at meetings, or when I'm giving talks, or even through what I write or draw in my comic strip, I try to make it something that makes a difference in people's life.
That was a fun interview. Thank you again to Brian Crane for sharing his testimony of leadership and his experience and also his time in the Funnies. Be sure to go to your local newspaper and look for his comic. I'm guaranteeing it's anywhere that you may live, at least in the United States, I would assume. Or you can go to gocomics.com and follow him there. I'll link to all that in the show notes so that you can follow Brian and look for the hidden temples in his comics. I sure hope you're enjoying some of these interviews of how I lead and various topics and subjects we cover on the Leading LDS podcast. If you have any ideas or individuals that would be a really good interview on this podcast, and even some that you don't think would be a good interview, you would be surprised at those that are a good interview. But reach out to me at Leading LDS, go to the contact page and send me some ideas, give me some feedback. That's the best payback that you can give to Leading LDS is send me an email and tell me what you think of the podcast. Good or bad, I want to improve it. And even this just the resource in general. A good way to support a Leading LDS is go to Leading LDS, search for the Consequence Stick, and check out the Consequence Stick. See if it's something that would be nice to have around your home or in your bishop's office or just in your quiver of leadership tools. I think it's a great visual aid, and it's a great way to support Leading LDS. Until next time, become a leader and not a calling.